Welcome to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who's out there, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. Again, thank you everyone for listening in. You can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. You can also find Justin the Food Entrepreneur's show on there. You can also find the Night Dasher, D-A-S-H-O-R, with Justin Bizarro on Spotify. And you can find the Centurion Leadership Battalion with Justin Bizarro as well on there. So look them up. There's also links in the bottom of the page to most of them. So we will be updating that information as we keep releasing podcasts. So we're recording like crazy. We are recording lots of podcasts across different avenues. I've even got a sore throat a little bit from recording so many. This will be my 37th episode I've recorded this week. Pretty impressive. But I'm stacking them up just because in case I do get sick or I want to go see my kids, my stepkids, go play sports. I can go do things like that without having to worry about covering all of it. So that being said, we are working hard. We're trying to deliver good content. Thank you, everyone, for listening into the No Show. As I'm recording this, we keep stacking up new episodes, which is pretty cool. And with that being said, as a way of diversifying, I'm trying to tell stories here. I'm trying to live out in the space and do diverse stories of the everyday person sort of rising up to greatness through habit, through long-term work. I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Benji Bronson. He's originally from Southern Ontario, Canada, and right now he's joining us from Los Angeles. How are you doing today, Benji?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. We had a little time. To catch up. We've Instagrammed back and forth. I think we came across each other on Instagram, just networking. You're a digital creator. That's what you call yourself. Like, talk to me about, you know, what is it? Was your specialty? I want to just highlight that his photography is awesome. And if you want to find him on Instagram, it's Northern_Maverick, just like Top Gun Maverick spelling. And so, tell us your story a little bit. Tell us what you do. Tell us how you started gaining skill in this craft.
I've done drawing and stuff my whole life. I was obsessed with photography from a really early age, but obviously, I wasn't allowed to have a camera, and I would do really weird things like draw a picture on paper and then like put tape over it so it looked like a glossy photograph. So from a really early age, I really liked photography. And, you know, when I did get to pick up a camera, I was pretty good at it right away. It wasn't really until high school that I started to really explore more specific mediums. Obviously, like in high school, like in that age group, everyone really wants to be in a band and things like that. I was all geared up actually to go to animation school, and I was, you know, building my portfolio and ready to apply. And then, you know, I got into photography. I was showing it actually back then on MySpace, and models and concert promoters and things like that would actually come to my high school and hang out with me. I went to an art high school called Beale Art. And so they were permitting that type of activity. You know, there are probably the rules have changed a little bit, but they were flexible and, you know, allowed me to, you know, be myself. I just sort of did portraits from a really early age, and you know, it grew and grew and grew, and word of mouth, more people knew that I did portraits. As social media was growing, more and more people needed portraits, and I could do them. I also would edit things on Photoshop, which a lot of people didn't do for a really, really long time in Canada, at least where I was from in Canada. So I was one of the first adopters of Photoshop, which of course, you know, made my services more attractive to people if they had blemishes and things like that, because they knew I could get rid of them. And, I ended up also becoming the first hip hop photographer in London, Ontario, because there was quite a rap scene there. And, you know, a really popular rapper, Casper, got me to do a photo shoot for him. And after I did a photo shoot for Casper, really a lot of other rap artists in London were, you know, aware of what I did. And I basically for a while had, you know, all the promotional photos, BTS concert photos for most of the rappers in the city, which was definitely a really great experience. They were really fun to work with.
I love it because your skill, I mean, they're artists, right? And so are you. You're an artist as well. So there's a lot of that stuff that goes on in your field, and how, like, let's talk about a kid. How did you end up in art school? Did you always know you wanted to be an artist? Like, let's talk about where that started.
You know, I think it's really interesting because I'm really, I'm a different sort of person. Like, I have a very business-minded temperament. Like, I don't have an artistic temperament at all. You know, in university, they all thought I was, like, in the business faculty. They didn't think I was in marketing or communications because of just how I behave. But then, I you know, people do like the art that I create. You know, from an early age, I remember, you know, being pulled out of my classroom by the principal so that I would sing for her in the hallway.
Awesome, actually.
And I remember, like, grade one, you know, I did a watercolor painting, and they put it up in the, and they put it up in the school in a frame, and one of the other parents got them to take it down because they thought my parents must have done it. So I remember stuff like that. So it happened from a, you know, an early age that there was, like, interest and demand. Also in high school, I started recording professionally with actually the same producer who was working with Leslie Carter from House of Carters when that show was on. And, you know, right off the bat, like, I picked up a guitar, and I think I learned to play one or two songs by other bands, but then I just immediately started writing my own songs. And in the very first song that I wrote ended up getting recorded, and, you know, it got pretty good reviews. I got written about in the local paper, and things just, you know, there seemed to just be interest in what I was doing. And I think that really, really encouraged me. Because obviously if there's interest and encouragement, you know, you're gonna go for that approval. I definitely, for probably my teens and up to my mid-20s, probably did have a bit of, like, an approval addiction. You know, I liked winning awards. I liked being on magazine covers. I liked all that stuff. And, you know, I'm very proud of those things because it helped build a portfolio, especially, you know, in PR and marketing, which is where most of my clients come in now. But, you know, I had to learn to chill a little bit and, you know, and just, you know, be myself and not always necessarily be going out for the prize.
Yeah, the achievement addiction. When I was a kid, I had it the same thing. I wanted that approval. I wanted that achievement for sure. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, part of it is because it's not for my parents. I did not have stage parents. My parents were not involved in things at all. You know, I had, like, signing ability in early high school, so I could sign off on all my own paperwork and things like that, just because they were busy doing their thing. And I was a responsible person. So the school, you know, let me do that, just to save my parents some time. But yeah, I wasn't from, like, really an entrepreneurial family or things like that. My parents were not pushing me. Like, they were more like hippie kind of parents, that were like, it's okay if you're a loser. And, like, and I was just like, so my drive really did come from within. Where, you know, I just, like, wouldn't back down, you know, went after things, which I think is good, because I was obviously working at my own pace, which was actually fairly intense for a really long time. But, you know, I wasn't one of those people whose parents were driving them. And so, you know, at the end of the day, like, if I look back on things and I think, oh, wow, I was being worked so hard, you know, I have really no one to blame but myself.
I'm the same way a lot. I agree with this. While I had hardworking parents, I also myself was, you know, so hardworking and pushed myself so hard that it was important to me. This is really cool. So, like, what were your who was influencing you then? Who was giving you ideas or artistic motivation to go in this direction? I mean, a lot of it's implanted in you, and you had to grow your own seed. I love it. But what was the thing that sort of really empowered you? What was the people around you that influenced you and wanted you to do better, you know?
Yeah, there was different musicians, producers I was working with. I ended up getting a business partner who she did a lot of managerial things, but to say that she was my manager would kind of be selling me short, and would also be selling her short as well, because essentially we were running an event company and record label together. So, you know, to say, like, that she was a manager or promoter would be selling her really short. And it would also be selling me short because it was very collaborative. We were both masterminds. And her name was Blue, AKA Laura. You know, and, like, we really collaborated a lot. We worked together remotely, and then we'd get together in person and run events and, you know, do publicity appearances together, all sorts of things, you know, and we were also working with some other artists as well, you know, networking and things like that. Actually, the band My Darkest Days that was signed by Chad Kroeger, we got them featured in the magazine. We got them their first TV appearance way back in the day. So we were really, really active, and we had a special gift for PR and marketing, you know, and we worked really, really hard, and she definitely influenced me to just be very professional all the time, you know, and also to the producers I was working with, you know, had sayings like, you know, no kinks in the armor, to make sure that your photos look good, that your performances are good, that you're dressed well. I definitely struggled with dressing properly for a really long time. You know, Blue was a leader for that. And, you know, some of my friends at school too said, you know, you really need to like up your game for style. My cousin Sal, she actually styled me lots of times, probably, you know, until I was about 25, like I would definitely be getting other people's opinions on what I should be wearing. Cause I would just wear a t-shirt and baggy jeans. And that's, you know, but like having that, you know, persona, and also to dressing the part, you know, a lot of people, you know, say, oh, you know, I want to express myself with my clothing. And it's like, that's okay. Like, but like, it is also okay to express other people as well. And it is also, you know, a level of communication, a visual communication, and you got to dress the part. You know, you don't want to confuse people. I mean, obviously nowadays things are definitely more fluid and people are dressing all sorts of ways. And, you know, I'm not going to say anything to knock that. But, you know, if you're showing up to a business meeting, you know, you should probably be wearing at least, you know, a blazer or something like that. If you're showing up to a concert, well, then, you know, ripped jeans and a leather jacket makes sense. And, you know, I definitely like, I think people should obviously express themselves, but, you know, there's so many ways of expressing yourself, verbally, creatively, you know, how just your overall vibe. But, you know, I think you can play with your clothing a little bit and kind of dress the part a little bit more and be a bit more of a chameleon and just communicate, you know, what you're there for, so that people can take one look at you and they know, okay, this person's there and they mean business. You know what I mean?
And I agree with you 100%. I think that as humans, we need to be aware of our audience. And it's all the time is showtime. That's what I always say, because how we do one thing is how we do everything. And we've got to be conscious, because if someone happens to get a negative opinion of us by the way we're dressed, I agree with this, even though I'm like, they shouldn't have a negative opinion, but we are judgmental as humans. And if we give them a negative thought right before we've even met them, we're already a little bit like a man behind or a man down in a game of chess, you know? So I agree with you, like owning the part, dressing good. I agree with you. You know, I dress well. I've always been conscious of it, but I've had to have a lot of people help me dress better and dress more appropriately and maybe not so cheaply and things like that all the time. And so, like, how did, you know, so you've done all this stuff. So where are you now? Like, what happens to music, or do you still write music? Do you still do photography? Let's talk a little bit about that. Where are you now?
You know, photography, I don't offer services as publicly now. It's just something I use to kind of enhance my brand online and, of course, enhance the brands of people I'm working with, you know, doing things like behind the scenes photos or press photos, you know, things like that. So it's sort of pivoted a little bit. I would like to maybe get back into offering portraits publicly. I really do like portrait photography. And I do think I have, you know, I've been told over and over again that I have a special gift for how I present people and, you know, how I kind of capture them on camera. And I would like to share that, you know, if people feel that's true. Music, I've really pivoted away from. I haven't sang or anything in like 4 years. as far as writing, I do lots and lots of creative writing. I'm definitely developing some really, really interesting projects that could end up involving some level of music writing. I have written jingles and things like that as well. Unfortunately, like with how the music industry is, there's a lot of pay to play. So when people talk music with me, like, you know, one of the things I always say is like, you know, if you want to do music, that's a great way to spend money, but it's not necessarily a great way to make money. I don't know if calling the music industry a music business, I don't know if business or industry are even the right words for it at this point, which, and I'm not saying that to be insulting. It's just, you know, it's just how it is, you know, people clamoring to, you know, get that quarter of a penny from like a spin or three spins on Spotify. Like, it's just, you know, it's not really becoming of like a business. It's not, you know, it's not very glamorous either at this point. I mean, obviously, you know, music is very, very important culturally to a lot of people. But yeah, it's definitely something I've pivoted away from. I think it'll always have a place. And I've definitely learned a lot, like doing the music thing. You know, my career didn't go the way I wanted it to. But I did have, you know, a number one song in a major city. And that did lead me and my writing team at the time to pitching songs to artists at Sony Canada. I did have two YouTube hit videos that charted on YouTube. One of them charted right next to Beyonce in 2011. So I got to have some good moments. I was signed into a licensing deal. So I didn't ever get signed to a record label as an artist, but my album got signed to Blue Sapphire Universal by the same guy who originally signed Shania Twain and Nickelback. It didn't end up going very well. He was in poor health and in a poor mood. And he was kind of a little bit out of touch with what was going on. But, you know, I did have that achievement though. And, you know, I obviously can name drop some pretty, pretty cool people that I was in league with. But, you know, it's like, I didn't want to be one of those people who was like 50 or 60 being like, hey, listen to my mixtape. So the entire time that I was working in music, I was building a portfolio as a PR professional, as a marketing professional. And I was working with other artists as well as like providing services to myself. And that kind of proved two things. One, that I could work really, really hard all the time, but that I could also deliver the same quality for other people that I delivered for myself. Because there's a lot of people, especially in creative fields and especially in music, where they will produce their own song and they'll do an amazing job. Then someone else hires them and it sucks. You know, there's lots of people who are running different promotional agencies. And like, if they do PR and marketing services for their band or for their daughter's band or whatever, they do an amazing job. Then if someone else hires them, you know, nothing really happens. They basically just take their money and do the minimum effort. Like, that happens a lot in sort of creative industries. And I think it probably happens in other industries too, but it's really, really prevalent in music. So I just, you know, I always delivered the same amount of work, the same amount of quality. I always guaranteed results, which a lot of people say, you know, they can't guarantee results for PR. I would tell people, listen, like, this is our time frame, and I'm going to keep going and going and going until I make something happen. It might be a podcast, it might be a radio interview, it might be a magazine interview, but I'm going to make stuff happen, you know, and here's the timeline. And I would always deliver on that. So I got a lot of really, really good habits out of music. It got definitely made me tough. You know, there's like a saying that I have where, like, in music, you have to be perfect just to be rejected. Yeah. You know, and so, you know, just being able to package things really, really well. And I've had some amazing opportunities for packaging other people. Like, I got to work with two US Olympians on three different pitch packages because they really liked how I package things. And I mean, and what an honor to get recruited through Instagram by a US Olympian. I mean, that's awesome. You know, and I've gotten to work for some really, really cool authors, people who've done TED Talks and things like that. So I think that the music adventures definitely prepared me just to be at a professional capacity almost all the time, and also to deal with rejection very, you know, pretty graciously, and to also just be very tenacious and keep looking for opportunities. If you can do it in music, you can do it in pretty much anything else. I did have a really hard time transitioning out of music. People did not take me seriously, especially in Canada, you know, which you'd think, coming to a marketing firm or an agency or something like that, being on magazine covers, booking other people for, you know, and getting people nominated for national awards, you'd think that would be appealing to an agency or something, but it wasn't. You know, they really looked down on me, which I was used to at that point. But, you know, eventually I did get in with some really, really great people. You know, I'm working with about 50 different authors now. Some of them are in the US, but some of them are in Canada and Australia. You know, and, you know, and just, you know, having the experience of the music really, really has been beneficial for them, because marketing a book is an awful lot like marketing an album. So, you know, that, and that's the thing, like, really, the competencies that you develop, especially in something like marketing, you know, if you can market music, which is something that's part of everyone's lives, but it's really a product that nobody needs necessarily, you know, you can definitely market things that are maybe a little bit more consumable.
Yeah, I agree with you on that a lot, actually, because, you know, the same way, not every, I mean, especially when you're first trying to make it as an artist or you're trying to build momentum, you know, things are about momentum and how do you get them. And then the transitions are hard when you have to go try to rebuild momentum in something else. So, like, what do you enjoy the most about all of it? Like, the PR stuff is really something you have a passion for. Tell me what, like, what drives you in that way? What are you doing, or what gives you satisfaction? And how do you measure success, I guess, in that way?
I definitely, you know, when it comes to success, obviously getting good placements in you know, a large amount of media outlets is really, really good. I've got a pretty good average for media pickups, you know, with the people I'm working with right now. And it's almost like getting points in a video game to get them in more, you know, news outlets, to get them in more blogs. And I do keep score. you know, obviously too, you know, getting bonuses and things like that when I can, you know, and obviously getting the satisfaction, getting the email where people say, thank you so much, this is awesome. I have one author with a very academically aligned book on, you know, a Hebrew poet, Yossi Ben Yossi. You know, it was definitely a challenging book to work with marketing wise, because it was just so cerebral and such a niche, you know. But I booked her an interview and she said, oh, it was a dream come true. And I was like, that like really hit me, you know, to get that response from the author. And that made me feel really, really good, because, you know, things that you know, we might take for granted, like being more involved in the media, you know, someone who's maybe more bookish, you know, like getting interviewed is a really, really big deal. And having that sort of like someone say literally a dream come true, you know, that really made me feel good. Obviously, like, I also want to see growth, and I want to expand my network and expand my credibility, things like that. I'm always looking for ways to be better at marketing and PR. And, you know, and I'm hoping I'm going to be meeting some really exciting people here in LA and picking their brains about things. But, you know, I one thing that I think would really be a measure of success for me would be developing new competencies in marketing, because I've been resting on sort of core competencies. But getting even more specialized, that's where I think there's a lot of value. You know, and this actually brings me back to university. You know, one of my professors like, oh, you know, you're here to become a generalist and people really want a generalist. And like, I had already been out in the working world. I already had multiple businesses. And I was like, that's a lie. I was like, okay, so I really need to specialize and do the opposite of what this professor is saying, you know? And so like, that's actually, yeah, one thing anyone listening, like, you know, the more specialized you get, like that's where there's a lot more opportunity, a lot more value. And I'm hoping to get very, very specialized in the near future.
Yeah, and I agree in this sense. I think that you have to focus on a skill as you're building it, or a craft, and you have to master that craft. And even if you have other mastered crafts, eventually you'll find something that takes those master crafts and come together, no different than what an iPhone is. For lack of a better term, like, it took a lot of different things and put it together in one thing, okay? And that's what we're talking about here in the human element. You have this music history, you know, then you have this PR history, and now you're like, okay, now I need to focus. But it doesn't mean you still don't have both those skills that you mastered in some ways, you know?
And that's one thing too, is that we live in a world, and I really think, and I you know, I don't want to like make enemies or anything, but I think that like the education system has really done us a lot of disservices, because these people go to school and they think that going to school makes them an expert at something. It doesn't. And then, you know, they get trained, okay, I have to have this degree to do this job. And then when they're in a position to hire, they won't hire anyone else who doesn't have a degree, because they don't believe anyone without a degree can do the job. And that's sometimes, you know, very, very far from the truth. There's lots of untapped talent where people really don't need to go to school for it. They refuse to spend the money. But then at the same time, they're limited to, I guess, their own scope and their own reach as entrepreneurs, because they can't get these bigger opportunities with bigger companies because they don't have a degree, like the golden ticket to go to, you know, Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. And I really, that's something I think is really, really wrong. And I think it's holding back our society at this point, because it really is the competencies that matter. And people who are, you know, stuck in sort of like thinking in a mindset like, oh, well, you don't have a degree, you know, in computer science or video game marketing. So how could you market a video game? It's like, well, I can market things that are very hard to market.
Fucking blows my mind. But you're right. You're 100% right about this. Yep, go on.
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, like if someone has really, really great competencies in something like marketing, you know, you should be looking at those competencies. You should be really, really looking at their portfolio and what they've achieved and not looking at whether they've specialized in video game marketing at some college somewhere, you know, with a professor who may not have ever even worked in the gaming industry, you know.
Yep, exactly. Agree. I agree with that 100%. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that basically sums it up, but, you know, and that's not to, you know, knock, there are some really great things about university, but like, let me tell you, if I was in charge, things would be done very, very differently. I really think that there are some core courses that are very, very valuable. They have different names in different institutions and obviously in different countries, but things like, you know, making sure you have effective writing abilities, having, you know, that grasp on grammar and presenting yourself, I think that's very, very useful. That's something universities, most of them, especially in Canada, can do well. Some of my friends here in the States at some of the different universities in Texas, I wasn't impressed with what I was seeing in their essays, but it depends. It definitely depends on the school. Obviously, I know California has great, great, great schools. And you know, it depends obviously on the institution, but, you know, and things like business, because I had one business professor and he did have a multi-million-dollar business. And, you know, he really got me on the tip of creating value. He gave me and my buddy Victor amazing encouragement. He said, you know, you guys should enter some of the contests. There was innovation contests. And you know what? Me and Victor did that. And we came in third in a tech innovation competition with an app design. We came up where we spent all summer kind of plotting how we were going to do it because we really wanted that for our resumes. And unfortunately, we went back to talk to Professor Tony and he was like, he wasn't at the school. No one knew who he was or where he was. It was like he just vanished, which is in and of itself a weird story at University of Windsor. But, you know, so like there is some value. But like, I honestly think I could have probably got all of the benefits of university probably in one semester. And I think probably a lot of people could too. And it's like, what do we want? Do we want to extract a bunch of money, create a bunch of debt? I mean, obviously our cities, you know, there's most towns in Canada are college towns. And the cities, the downtowns are totally powered by student debt. It's not a great situation. But it's like, you know, do we want to just be, holding people's talents hostage, extorting them until they go into a ton of debt, you know, and basically just obscuring competition, you know, making everything take longer than it should. I was really fortunate. I fast tracked through. I got my entire degree in 2 years. I couldn't imagine spending 4 years doing that. It would have been, you know, so much more. I would have been a loss, you know, for the living expenses and things like that. You know, it's like we could be doing things more efficiently. We could be doing things in a way that's maybe more fair and just more beneficial all around for everyone. You know, I think that if things were changed, probably more people would go to school.
I agree with you. And I think the thing about specialization or getting specialized earlier on, I think is an important thing. We kind of talked about it, but if you want to be an entrepreneur, they need to have a program that integrates in working with other entrepreneurs or something, because I get it. Like, here's the thing about school. Like, the best thing to do is to be able to learn what you're doing in the real world and while you're going to school. And if you have professors that haven't done it, it's very hard to take them seriously, especially when you are in the middle of maybe building a business while you're going through school, or you already have one and that's why you're in school. Or, you know, in my case, you go back to get a degree later on in life and you're like, as an entrepreneur, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this, but now I'm committed, so I'm going to do it. But it's one of those things that I agree with you 100%. And I think the lessons of life and the lessons of business and the lessons of professions often have to do with education, but not necessarily in the traditional sense. And then experience in that business, you just got to work in it and learn it. And then two, exposure to other things. Like, do you have creative ideas? Can the world around you, can you present yourself on a worldly basis and be exposed to the world? You know, it's those type of things. All were fine. Maybe they start building the character, but I agree with you. There's all these things that we need to instill in individuals that we just sort of don't anymore. Like philosophy, like maybe we should spend a little more time on that, or something that helps humans have a better understanding to think, you know, what is it that I want? What do I need for purpose? Find a driving force in life, not just try to be something that they're not, or then just be miserable, you know? So, tell me about what you're doing now, for yourself, like what motivates you to keep going?
You know what? I mean, everyone, we all have our moments. I don't like being bored. And, you know, I mean, I can enjoy watching it. I watched, you know, 30 Rock or whatever the other day, and I laughed and I had a good time. But usually I don't get a lot of satisfaction watching, streaming, or playing video games. I'm not much of a spectator. And I know that can be kind of tacky, but like, I like to be busy. I like to be actually creating something, doing something, experiencing something for real. And so just like, my interest in just the world is sort of my motivation. You know, and the fact that like, I just don't have the same taste as everyone else. It's like, I kind of just have to, get up and, you know, dust myself off and just push myself a little bit harder, because I can't just sit there, you know, and eat cheese doodles and watch streaming services. Like, I'm just not satisfied. So I guess maybe like my dissatisfaction in many forms of entertainment and media is sort of my motivation to kind of create my own and to keep going and to experience new things. You know, not everyone can be out there. Not like, obviously we do need audiences. Not everyone can be a maker, but I'm definitely more of a maker than a spectator. And you know, also too, I got to work with some really great entrepreneurs, in Washington, over the last couple years. And, you know, they were just doing wonderful things, you know, running grocery stores, running real estate companies, running construction companies, venturing into publishing, which is where I came in with my digital media making. And, you know, they got me my first visa for the United States. And that was like a miracle. That was really inspiring, because it's very, 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 very hard to get a visa if you're Canadian. So that like impressed the daylights out of me. And, you know, I got to like see their lifestyle and how they, you know, how the family shared like a lake house and stuff like that. And it was really, really cool. And I thought, you know what, I really want to have a lake house for my family in the future. And so that's also part of my motivation, is just like, you know, the aesthetic of having like a shared family property in the future. That's like a vacation property. You know, and like, I really do think of that. I think of the lake house and I think of the family gathering I got to be part of there. And, you know, and just kind of like copying their homework, basically, and doing that for myself and developing, you know, a family situation like that. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. They gave me the template. And, you know, it might sound kind of like a little bit vapid and shallow, but yeah, like having, you know, having a big family and having a lake house, like those are two goals that are definitely motivating for me. That's my carrot on a stick.
Very cool. Lastly, as we, you know, where do you want to go with this? Like, where do you see your future beyond just these things? Like, do you see yourself, do you want to run a PR firm? Do you want to have, like, talk to me about, like, what is it that you're building from a business standpoint?
That's a really good question, because direction is very, very important. For me with marketing, you know, marketing is so important in every aspect of every business. And I really believe that my experience in marketing can obviously be useful on the back end when you're actually marketing whatever it is that needs to be marketed. But I believe that my understanding of, you know, politics, business, media, that can really have a positive impact on the production end, so that marketing is always in mind, because, you know, part of the production team, you know, is also part of the marketing team. Because there are times where, you know, the marketing minds and the creative minds don't always mesh. And I really see myself being a liaison between the marketing people, their data crunching, you know, the PR aspects of things, and also, you know, creating great content. You know, it's a lofty goal, but I'm working very, very hard to develop a cartoon series. And it's based on actually a comic that I did when I was in high school. And, you know, I really believe I can bring a lot of value to streaming services. I think that I can create things that are very, very marketable inherently. And, you know, I just want to put a smile on people's faces on a very, very wide scale. I've done so much as an indie artist. I've done indie cartoons. I've done indie music. I've worked with lots of independent authors, you know, some of whom have had some really great sales. But, you know, I do really want to partner with a big brand and create, you know, something that's a household name and a product and content that becomes a part of everyday life for people, that becomes part of, you know, what they quote. And the idea too of other people, you know, making fan art. I was really fortunate to have some fan art made recently, and that made me feel really, really good. You know, so I guess I'd like to, you know, inspire people and make media that's really part of, you know, like the greater consciousness of, I guess, our society.
Very cool. Where can they find you online?
So the best place to find me right now is either Ben G. Bronson on LinkedIn. I believe I'm the only Ben G. Bronson. And also, like you said, Northern_Maverick on Instagram. That's my number one platform. Obviously, you know, we talked a lot about photography. I love making photography. I love looking at other people's photography. So follow me there. I still can follow a few people back. I've got capacity for that. They cap it at, I think, 7,500 people that you're allowed to follow now. But I've still got room to follow more people. So send me a message, say you heard me on the podcast, and, you know, I'll definitely follow back.
And, that's really cool. I think what you're doing is phenomenal. And if you could go back and tell yourself anything, you know, maybe it's when you went to school or 5 years ago, or inspire the audience in any way, what would you say?
You know what? It's funny you mentioned school, because that's one of the first things that came to mind. I waited till I was, you know, an adult student to go to university. And I went to college. So in Canada, college and university, it's starting to get more like the United States. They're changing it, but it's separate. So like college is like job skills, and it's very much skills based. And then university is more theory. And they're starting to change that. And usually college credits will not count towards university in Canada. They are changing that now, but there was that sort of division. So like when you think of, I guess, like trade schools and things like that in Canada, like that, the colleges are more like, I guess, trade schools. It's a different sort of setup. And I did college in 2014, and I actually did an accelerated program, and was successful in that. And then I waited another couple years. I actually ended up running a delivery business of my own that was a cross-border delivery service. And then I went to university because, oddly enough, I just knew the border was going to close. And so I exited, I think, in late 2017, and applied for university. And then, you know, by 2020, the borders did close. So I was indeed right with that. But I would tell myself to go to university, get that over with, maybe not right after high school. Because I think having a little bit of life experience helps you kind of see through some of the flakier theories they promote. And it helps you kind of zero in on the subjects of value and the courses of value as well. But definitely not to wait as long as I did. I would also, you know, I was advised by one of my science teachers in high school not to fast track. And he was obviously saying that he didn't want me to get a bad education, because some of the summer courses were just for the kids who skipped all year, and it, you know, they were just kind of passing them through. So I understand why he said that, but like, you know, I would have just gone to summer school at a different school, or found one with year-round schooling. But I do think that like I should have been fast tracking from the beginning, gone to university sooner. I didn't know I could fast track in university. I thought there was more rules with that. I didn't know I could get a degree in 2 years. And even one of my friends who's a university professor said I couldn't. And then he quickly changed his news and said, well, maybe you could, but you wouldn't want to. But I absolutely did. And that actually raised my marks. My marks were higher fast tracking through university than they ever were in high school. I think I was probably bored. So I guess I would tell myself to fast track through high school. I went to college actually for power generation engineering. And I think having a background in STEM is really, really important. I know not everyone can necessarily become a licensed engineer, but you know, I think exploring STEM and just how things work, how the world around us works, I think having that foundational knowledge, even if you're not going to go into engineering or construction or things like that, I think it's good to have that knowledge, just and that awareness of just how everything works around you. For project management, there's lots of applications in the managerial side where knowing how things work is very advantageous. I think that was a good thing. I wish I did it sooner. I would encourage, maybe if there's younger people listening, to definitely explore that. You don't have to necessarily commit to it. Think of how many people, you know, take, you know, courses in underwater basket weaving and they don't get a career in it. Maybe you do just take some courses or whatever, you know, just to learn certain things about how the world works. I think that could be really, really useful. And yeah, don't be afraid to fast track. Like when I have kids, I'm definitely not going to push them to fast track. I don't think pushing people into things is necessarily the right way to do things. And, you know, I wouldn't want to interfere with them developing their own work ethic by pushing too hard. And I think a lot of parents do that. They push their kids so hard that as soon as their kids are on their own, they become couch potatoes. So I would definitely want people to be aware of that issue. Obviously, we want to, you know, we want everyone to be successful in our families. But yeah, you know, to be conscious of having people develop their own work ethic, and find their own interests and find their own niche. And if they want to fast track, like I would, you know, if I had kids right now, I wouldn't push them to fast track, but I would let them know that it is an option and that maybe their marks might be better and they might like school more if the workload's a little bit heavier and if it gets done faster. Because, you know, the promise of getting it done in 2 years instead of 4 years was like, you know, that was like candy to me. I almost said it was like crack, but I don't do crack. But I think honestly, you know, that is something that people don't know is an option. I didn't know it was an option. My friend who was a professor didn't even think it was logistically possible. And, you know, University of Windsor, there was student advisors and stuff like that. They did an awful lot of one-on-one work with me to plan the courses so that I could get it done in 2 calendar years. And there was, you know, there was also professors and faculties and stuff that did favors, moved me into classes when I didn't have the prerequisites. So I had a tremendous amount of support from University of Windsor in Canada. But I think, you know, if you're serious about it, you show the interest, you can probably get that kind of support here or anywhere. And so, yeah, anyone who's either starting school, about to go into school, maybe they're already in school, consider fast tracking. Really, really consider it, because there's one really great benefit to fast tracking that nobody really talks about. Besides being more engaged and more challenged, you're going to save money on the living expenses. Tuition's expensive, but the living expenses are really where a lot of people go into debt. And if you can cut your university education in half by 2 years, and you don't dawdle, because some people end up taking 5 years for a four-year degree. If you get it done in 2 years, you're saving 2 years of living expenses, 2 years of rent, 2 years of food, 2 years of occasional entertainment costs. You know, you're also paying less fees at the school because you're not there as long. So those are definitely things to consider. And I would definitely encourage people to really give it, you know, a lot of thought. Obviously, it's not for everyone, but, you know, if it is for you, to go for it.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. One more time, where can they find you on social media?
LinkedIn at Ben G. Bronson and Northern_Maverick on Instagram. And that's where I share all my photography.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. I appreciate all of you guys. I love you guys. And we're out.